Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming spine conditions through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal healthcare. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be speaking with Monteclair Greer, currently the senior director of a young health tech company who's experienced some discomfort in her low back since her college days and throughout her early 30s. While packing for a trip in 2011, she unexpectedly injured her back just as she headed out with some friends for a road trip to Florida. She later found out she had a ruptured disc. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Monteclair's story. Monteclair was about to leave her house for a drive to Florida when she decided to check the house one more time.
I was finished packing and had all the suitcases by the door. I walked back through the house and closed one of the doors behind me, and I took two steps and heard a pop in my back. I went right down to the floor. I knew something bad happened, but I had no idea what it was other than I was in severe pain.
Monteclair was ultimately able to get up and convince everyone in the car she was fine and began the grueling drive to Florida.
The ride down was incredibly uncomfortable, and I spent the entire week in Florida flat on my back in bed with two trips to the local clinic for injections and medication. The ride home was probably the most miserable 8 hours of my life, with tears rolling down my face the majority of the way. My poor friends.
Monteclair made an appointment with her sports medicine doctor the next day after returning home.
I'd seen my sports med doctor several times over the previous 2 years for lower back and sciatic nerve problems. I had steroid injections that usually remedied all the past issues.
During her appointment, the doctor told her that her injury was much worse this time, and he was convinced that she had ruptured a disc in her back, and so he ordered an MRI to be sure.
The MRI confirmed I had ruptured a disc between L4 and L5, and surgery was needed.
Monteclair booked an appointment with a neurosurgeon that week, and upon review of the MRI, she was scheduled for surgery within 2 days.
That all came to a screeching halt when I requested the surgery be done in a hospital rather than the clinic. My family has a history of malignant hypothermia, and although I've never experienced an issue, I always share it with doctors just so they can be prepared. My surgery was moved to the hospital 2 months later.
While waiting for her surgery, she was having trouble walking, sleeping, basically doing anything normal on her own, and could not go to work.
Working from home was not common during this time, and I was very concerned about the time frame, not to mention the severe pain I had endured for almost 3 weeks. I went back to my sports medicine doctor for advice, and she suggested I try a different surgeon who worked exclusively in the hospital.
After meeting with the second surgeon, Monteclair had a discectomy 2 weeks later, 5 weeks after the initial injury, on September 30th, 2011. Monteclair, your story is actually incredible. It's so important because it shows what success can happen with taking quick action to figure out what's going on with you. Now, that 8 hour drive sounded like it probably felt like it took forever and wasn't quick action, but you know, you got back to your doctor right away and you looked into what was going on, and it sounds like you really just had to do that. Tell me what it was like and how it felt knowing that this situation was different than what you had had before. You talked about you had a sports medicine doctor you had a relationship with, and you had sort of recurring pain that you were treating with injections and over-the-counter pain medicines, but this was different. Describe to me why you knew this was different.
The pain was relentless. It wasn't something that came and left. It was constant in my back and down both of my legs. I'd have help doing everything. I was completely miserable. It was miserable for everyone. I knew I couldn't live with the pain and I needed relief immediately. I was helpless without my husband, James, and we both were at the mercy of the doctors and their timelines.
Yeah. When you went to get the MRI, were you pretty not surprised with the finding that MRI came back with?
The sports med doctor did share with me that she felt like surgery was in my future. So I felt, I knew that news was coming. I didn't know exactly what had happened or the extent, but I knew she wouldn't have told me that had it not been necessary.
So you feel like in those previous sort of months and years that you were managing this lower back pain, that there was something talking to you there and your sports medicine doctor said probably someday this is going to need something more?
I think she had told me throughout the years that this wasn't something that was going to go away and that I was doing as best I could to manage it. And we didn't know what the end result or when it would come. And this was the day. So,
yeah. You know, I'm asking that question because I myself have experienced that. And I think a lot of other people experience that. We get a lot of questions, you know, a ruptured disc, a herniated disc is something that is fairly common, unfortunately. As you know, there are lots of different reasons for that to happen, but they can be treated non-operatively for a long time. And the question is, how long? And the answer to that is, it depends, right, on genetics and various factors. So it's interesting because myself, with a herniated disc that I have treated non-operatively, my doctor has said to me, you know, someday that's going to rear itself again and you probably need surgery for it. So I empathize with you. I think a lot of people empathize with that. So not surprising for you to feel like this is the day, the time has come.
Yes, it was definitely my card was drawn at that day. So I knew surgery was ahead.
Yeah. So Monty, I want to explore that decision to have surgery. You are currently working in the healthcare space. Were you working in healthcare at the time that this happened?
I was. I was working in medical device for orthopedics.
So did you have some inside knowledge from work about the kinds of procedures or the sort of things that the surgeon would be talking about with you?
A little bit. I focused more on hips and knees.
Okay.
But I had several friends that worked in the spine industry. And so I immediately picked up the phone and called them and spoke to them about this type of surgery and, you know, pros and cons for having the surgery or not. And all signs pointed to have the surgery, put this pain behind you and move on.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with this forever. I even had a friend that I worked with at the time who we compared bad back stories often at work. And he went to have nerve blocks every year, sometimes twice a year.
Oh my gosh.
And I absolutely knew that was not the path I wanted to take. He was completely limited and I didn't want to be limited anymore. I had suffered long enough with limiting my exercise and being nervous about what I could and couldn't do, that it was time for it to be fixed and behind me.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I think, you know, for all of us, making that decision on what treatment path to choose is the toughest decision, you know, and I think, you know, for some of us who are in healthcare, you know, we feel like we have resources. We know people to call and we've got informed folks around us. And that's kind of what this podcast is all about, is helping everyone else out there to have a voice of a trusted source that can help them in that decision-making process. Like, what are the things I should think about? What are my choices? What is that going to look like if I do or don't choose, you know, one treatment path versus the other? And so, you know, for you, helping to explain to our audience how you arrived at the decision to have the surgery, I think is really helpful for people to know. So let's talk about your choice of surgeon. You went to one surgeon first. How'd you choose that particular surgeon? Was it a referral from your doctor, or did you call around, or how do you find a doctor?
A little bit of both. The sports medicine doctor was the one I knew the best, of course. I had seen her for many years, and she was a referral to me from my GP. So that's how I got to her. Speaking with her, she gave me the option to go to this clinic that did surgery in clinic. In and out, super quick. You were back home. You recovered at home, which I really was looking forward to.
Yeah.
And I went straight to them. And they actually booked the appointment and then called a few other friends who had been to this clinic. And they shared their wonderful stories. And so I was very excited about going. And the appointment was quick. And they immediately booked the surgery. And I thought all was going well until I mentioned the malignant hypothermia. And then it was record screech, stop. And, you know, that was where clinics don't work out for people,
right,
versus a hospital. And so I didn't know that until I was there and had asked those questions. And so I'm thankful for some people saying no, because that means they're not prepared for that particular problem and you need to go elsewhere. So that was a good reason for me to go back to the sports medicine doctor. She then gave me a second name.
And Monteclair, this is so huge. I mean, we talk about patients advocating for themselves. And, you know, had you not shared that family history or your history, you don't know what might have happened. So that is just so huge to remind people to advocate for themselves, share your history, talk about your family history, your personal health history, things that you think may not be related at all, and share that with your provider. And good for that provider to say, yep, we don't want to treat that in an outpatient, out of hospital setting. You're going to need more monitoring and we're not the right practice for you. I mean, that is just huge. And so wonderful that you're sharing that with people so that you know, like, oh shoot, here you are about to get your answer and your problem solved and back to your life. And like, nope, got to take another delay, another diversion. And I'm sure that must have been frustrating because you're still in pain at this point, right?
Severe pain. It was terrible and getting worse. So I knew I had to do something. And I, you know, putting a surgery out for 2 months was absolutely not an option. So I was very motivated to find another doctor and to go speak with him immediately so I could get something done. And there's so much online now that you can read about doctors as well. So as soon as I was recommended a doctor and got an appointment, I started looking online and, of course, talking to friends. And they, you know, it led me to the doctor that actually performed the surgery. And I'm so glad it did because it worked out so well.
That's great. That's great. And a big part of that also is that when you meet that surgeon, you have to feel comfortable as well. So, you know, you sort of read those reviews. They're out there. Talk to people. Find out, you know, what other people's experiences are. If you can do that, these are all the right steps. These are all the right things to do to make sure that you are in the right place for you. And it's so important to remind everyone to do that because that can take some time. And the problem is, when you are in pain, you just want the pain to end. You just want to say, get me to somebody and get this taken care of. But it really behooves us to just take a little extra time to make sure you're in the right place for you. And that can mean that it might take a little bit longer, a few days longer, but then you're going to have an amazing result. So explain to us how the, you know, day of surgery was and what it was like, you know, immediately after and the days following surgery.
It was funny, the day of surgery, I actually had felt better than I had in weeks prior. I think it was just the relief of this is going to be over soon.
Yeah.
And I was able to walk into the hospital on my own. And
Were you not walking alone prior to that?
Not without assistance.
Wow.
I needed assistance to help to move any length of time. I needed assistance to move. I had a walker in my house, and then my husband helped me anytime I went anywhere further than that. But I was able to walk into the hospital on my own, got dressed. The surgery was a bit delayed, just as surgeries are delayed. I was fine. and they wheeled me in. The surgery was really long. It was about 4.5-ish hours with another hour of recovery. So I was back there, as they say, back there for a really long time. And I remember when I woke up from surgery that it was a completely different pain that was terrible, but it was, I knew that was surgery pain. And I could feel my legs being normal, even though I was still laying flat and hadn't gotten up yet. I knew my legs were already better. And that was a massive relief that previous pain had gone. And now I was dealing with surgical pain that I was going to recover from. So that was a massive relief. And I was so glad, even though it was still painful and I still had a ways to go, that I was at that step.
That's incredible. You wake up from surgery and you know that that nerve pain is gone. And people describe that, and it's just so hard to even imagine what that's like. But it is life-changing. You know, it's amazing to be at that point. And yeah, there's incision pain, there's, you know, discomfort from the operation, but it's amazing how the brain is able to differentiate that from what it was before. I just think that's just a miracle. I mean, that's really just a miracle. I'm so excited for you. So how long were you in the hospital? Did you stay overnight?
I did have to stay overnight. And I think that was due to the malignant hypothermia. And then, of course, because the surgeries were delayed, everything was pushed back a little further. So I stayed in the hospital overnight, and I had to wear the compression garments on my legs, the whole nine yards. But it was fine. The nurses were lovely. I was able to, with assistance, get up and move around a little bit, and went home the next day. So it was a quick solution to a really long, I felt like, grueling long problem I had. And I was back home within, you know, 24 hours and on to recovery at my house.
That's just, again, the miracles of modern spinal health care, as we talk about. Like, it's really just amazing that you can just get in there, be taken care of, get on with your life. Just congratulations on that. It's amazing.
Yes, it was a drastic difference for sure.
I'm looking at you smiling from ear to ear as we're saying this. It's just, I can just see and it's palpable, you know, what you've been through and what you've been able to overcome. How was the pain when you were in the hospital? Were you on any pain medicine?
Yes, plenty of pain medicine in the hospital. I slept the majority of time I was there. But it was fine. Whatever I needed to get through that evening and then get on home. And when I got home, I remember thinking, this does hurt. This is not fun. But I had my legs back. So that was a drastic difference that made everything better, because I could move my legs on my own and walk much better. Even though I was slow, I was still walking without assistance. And the pain medicine, you know, was expected. It was there, but it was easy to trail off. I knew there was going to be an end date.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of pain medication. And so I was super excited to get it out of my system.
Yeah. Amazing. And how was recovery? So did you start physical therapy and went through that?
I did not go to physical therapy. I was able to just stay home, move slowly. I rested. Although I got a little frustrated now and then, I followed doctor's orders and did what I was supposed to do. And on my first week checkup, so I went in 1 week after surgery to check in with the doctor. And he told me at that time, it'll be 3 months before I felt normal again. It'll be 6 months before I could exercise regularly without limitations. And a year before I didn't think about surgery every day. And I have to tell you, he was pretty spot on.
Wow.
I felt immediately better after surgery, even though I had that surgical pain. It was just different, but it was expected. It was something I knew that I needed to recover from. And I had to remind myself most days that I was still recovering, to give myself the grace and the time needed to move a little slower. I still had to have help with my shoes, and that I needed to rest more often than I really wanted to. I couldn't just jump back into things. And because I minded the rules, everything went smoothly.
That is so awesome. And so, Montclaire, what are some of the things that you enjoy doing now physically?
Well, I don't have any limitations now whatsoever. I don't even think about it. Actually, when we were discussing this podcast, I had to remember that I had back surgery, you know, wow, so many years ago. I don't think about it. I have the tiniest little scar on my back. And occasionally, if I go get a massage or something like that, somebody will see it and immediately hands off, "Are you okay? You have a scar." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I completely forgot. I should have told you. I'm fine." So no limitations.
Wow, my gosh. That's awesome.
I think the hardest part to get over the whole process of having back surgery is your head. So even though you go through the process and you go through the recovery, you do all the things the doctors say and you're back to normal, your head is the hardest thing to get over the hump. Because I'm sure everyone is terrified that it was going to come back, or that it was going to happen again, or that I was going to do something and mess up the surgery and then have to live with that pain the rest of my life. I was terrified of that. And that took the longest to go away. I just knew if I didn't do every step perfectly that it was going to return. And thank goodness it never did. And so I really focus on staying strong now because I want to prevent any other future issues that I might have. If they're lurking somewhere, I want to prevent them. And so I try to stay as strong and active and mobile as I can so I don't have to go back to that.
Yeah. I am looking at a beautiful, vibrant, healthy, gorgeous woman on the screen. And I would say, whatever you're doing appears to be working. So what are the secrets just to your fitness and wellness? What are some of those things that you could share with us?
Just try to keep moving.
Yeah. Good.
I love a fitness class. I love the camaraderie and I love the accountability of going to a class where people are used to seeing you. And if you don't show up, they call you out. I love challenging myself. I'm a big spin class girl. And sometimes I may be sitting next to a 20-year-old on a spin bike. And I love trying to beat the 20-year-old. And you know, that's really fun to me, is to challenge yourself, even though no one else is participating in this race, just me. But I'm the one that's going to push myself to go hard and to get there. And that's where I like to go. I think that's why the fitness classes are so exciting to me, because there's other people to kind of bounce the competition off of.
But a little healthy competition.
Yes. And I enjoy now, you know, as you get older, I want to lift heavy. And I realize that lifting weights is a really good way to also stay, to not gain weight, lift weights. And so I've gotten into that.
Weight bearing activity for your bones is really good for osteoporosis prevention.
Good. Yep. So that's where I've gotten to that a little bit too here recently. I have a couple of friends who have gotten into bodybuilding in their late 40s. And they're such a inspiration to me. I'm like, I'm not going to be a bodybuilder, but heck, I can lift weights too. Let's go get it. So
that's great. That's awesome. That is so awesome. Well, this has just been so awesome talking with you. I think, thank you for sharing a little bit of that sort of the head game, right? The sort of mental health component of overcoming a back challenge. It's actually a very big issue for many people who have to overcome a spine condition. And that you've described it so beautifully, just that just being so frightened of hurting myself again. I don't want to hurt myself again. I don't want to get back to that. I don't want to go back there. I don't, you know, and once you realize your body is strong and resilient and not fragile, and you can get strong and move on, and you've done all those things, Monty. And thank you for sharing that so honestly with us. It's just absolutely awesome.
Well, thanks so much for the National Spine Health Foundation to interview patients and to really hear the stories and share the stories, because this is what helps other people make decisions. Being in the healthcare industry for so long, Patients need patient advocates. And so I'm happy to be one.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Monty. I appreciate that so much. We will share your message far and wide for sure. I appreciate that. It was such a delight to meet you and to hear your story. Sharing it with the community is no doubt going to help someone here who's listening help make the decision they need to make. And I thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much.
At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.